Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us. I have the great privilege of having this morning the author of Look to the Mountain, an Ecology of Indigenous Education, Dr. Gregory Cayette. Look to the Mountain is a wonderful book that offers not just educators, but people in general, a remarkable fresh perspective on the challenges facing education in contemporary society. Dr. Cayette is a member of the Tewa peoples from New Mexico. Very privileged to have you on our program.
Thank you very much. I'm really very happy and very honored to have some time to share my thoughts with you.
Now, you've written about an ecology of Indigenous education. Tell us what inspired you to write this book. What is the hope in writing this book?
Primarily, it's a book that is, I guess you might say, a product of both, I would say, creative anger would be one way to describe, one emotion that went into writing this book. I work at that time at a school called the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And the school basically is a Bureau of Indian Affairs school. It's one of three post-secondary schools, and in this case, the Institute of American Indian Arts is dedicated to using the arts primarily as a foundation for training young aspiring Native people in the vocation of art in a variety of areas. So it's it of its very nature was a very early on a kind of leader in culturally based arts education. So I was a teacher there. I'm also a self-taught artist. And during that time, I was really, the school was involved or embroiled, as will happen, with many issues related to its, literally, its existence. And at that time, it was being slated to be closed. And we had gone through a major effort through the Congress, because the school actually is a line item within the federal budget. It's a federally chartered school, one of just a few in the country. And we were being slated to be basically erased from the budget, and so it was a very traumatic time. We had come out of that. They had allowed the school to remain open and reorganized it. It had to change in a very significant way from being an indigenous school to being a school that reflected essentially the Western idea or concept of education. And of course, many of us teaching at the school at that time were very passionate and committed to the school and to the idea of creating an indigenous school around indigenous arts. And so we felt that we had been in a sense compromised in a very significant way with the new legislation. So even though we did remain open, and and the institute is still open today and getting lots and lots of money from various sources, it lost something during that time. And so it was a passion that then led me to begin to write, what is the ecology of Indigenous education? I had been working on what is called a culturally relevant or culturally based science education curriculum, which I had introduced at the school at that time, which integrated science with art, with the cultural perspectives of the students coming from throughout the United States, to the school too. So based on that, also I had to go into really answering the question, what is Indigenous education, or what is education for Indigenous people? How did we practice this process of education in pre-Columbian times? What was our epistemology, if you will, of education? So that's what led me essentially to explore, to research, and to write the book, Look to the Mountain. So that's kind of, brief, the story of how I wrote it. Let me just finish by saying that the term Look to the Mountain is actually it's an English translation of a Tewa metaphor. We're surrounded by four sacred mountains here in New Mexico, where I live, and in my village, which is Santa Clara Pueblo, which is one of six Tewa-speaking pueblos north of Santa Fe. We have various sacred mountains, that sort of encompass or sort of bound, our territory. And so elders will sometimes come up, and especially as we're discussing different kinds of issues that affect the community as a whole, I remember some elders using the term look to the mountain, which is basically telling the people, look to your history, where you come from, because as you climb a mountain, you go through a process of going through the foothills and climbing to the top of the mountain. And then when you're on top of the mountain, you have another perspective, which is your present. And then as you look out from the top of the mountain, to the other mountains and other valleys around you, you have a vision of possibilities of where to go next. So it's past, present, and future coming together in that act of journeying, to the mountain. And so it's a way of understanding perspective about what you are discussing or what you're reflecting on. And so I use that metaphor, very specifically to reflect on what is Indigenous education, what does that mean, what did that mean to us in the past, what does it mean to us in the present, and what are the possibilities, what is the vision of Indigenous education for the future. And so that's basically Look to the Mountain, and that's the metaphor that I used.
That's a beautiful metaphor. I just want to borrow on something you mentioned, and that is that creative anger, because in your book you speak about mythopoetic, and I want to talk about the myths. There are myths in our society that not only create how we see the world, but how we engage in the world. And one has been that education is a neutral force, and it takes that stance in relation to colonization. It takes the stance that colonization is something that happened long ago, and it's, we're in a post-colonial society now. So I want to speak about, from a perspective of the Maya people, the Aymara people, the Ojibwe, Haida, the Tewa people, to me it seems that process continues today. I wonder, could you talk about what has been the legacy of education in the colonization process, and what stories of this sad history must be remembered today?
Well, I have to say emphatically that education is not neutral, nor has it ever been neutral, especially in terms of the way it has been practiced and applied within Western cultural settings. Very definitely, education was a tool of colonization, and really continues to be that in some ways today. I think that one of the struggles that Native people have as a whole has been, to in a sense, endure, if you will, Western education, to find ways to adapt to it without losing themselves. And it's been a very long and tenuous history that Native people have had with education as a whole. And so we're just really, really within this past 50, 60 years have begun to just very much a step-by-step process, regain control or at least some control of our education and also of our process of education. So it's been a long journey in really just being self-determined and really applying that concept of self-determination to education. But yes, definitely education has never been, for Native people at least, neutral.
So I think of the stories that frame that discussion, though, and where are our stories? What are the stories that we must be remembering and retelling?
Well, in the book, Look to the Mountain, as I researched this question, what is indigenous education? And of course, the philosophical term that is used for this process of learning culturally is epistemology, which is a fancy philosophical term, but basically it means how do you come to know what you know? How do you come to know what you know? And so you see, every human cultural group has had a philosophy, a vision, if you will, an understanding of how they collectively come to know what they know, which is the epistemology. So, for example, in order to create the kinds of curriculum that I was creating at the Institute at that time, I had to understand, first of all, what is our own history of indigenous education, what is our epistemology, because unless you understand that, you don't really have a truly culturally based or culturally relevant curriculum that you can begin to build from. So as I was looking, really looking and researching all over the world and trying to find some kind of a handle, if you will, that I could use, a story or a case that sort of exemplify what indigenous epistemology was, I happened on a very old work that was being done in the early 60s by a gentleman whose name is Miguel Leon Portillo. And he worked, I believe, out of the University of Texas, Austin. And he wrote a book in the 1960s called Aztec Thought and Culture. And in that, he was exploring, what the Aztecs believed education was. And so there's a poem in there, because he was using translations from Nahuatl to Spanish into English and looking at different kinds of remnants of poems, that had survived the burning of the libraries in Mexico City at that time. And he found a poem that sort of, and he characterized it in this way. He said, there was a professor, in one of the colleges, the universities, if you will, of the Aztec. And the question was to the students, the professor's question to the students was, what is it to be a person of knowledge? And the students, and again, all of this is chanted, you see, very much like the Hawaiians and the Maoris, the discourse was chanted, in these ritual poems and ritual prayers. And so the chant was given, what is it to be a person of knowledge? The students go off and come back maybe a few days later, and they have a responsal chant that is basically in a poetic form. And that's what these poems that Miguel Leon Portillo was studying. And so in the chant from the students back to the professor, they said this, first one must find one's face. One must find one's face, which in our terms today means you have to have a sense of your identity. Then they said one must find one's heart, which is really, in today's education jargon, the affective domain. You have to have a sense of why you're doing something. But it goes much deeper. Finding a heart is really also about finding your own sense of spirit. And then one must find one's foundation to stand on, which allows you to most completely reflect your heart and your face. And so foundation in our terms today would be vocation, that kind of work that you would do that would allow you, in a sense, to be completely expressive of who you are as a person. And then that all of that happened in these contexts of relationships and responsibilities, concentric rings of relationship and responsibility. First, yourself to yourself to your family, yourself to your clan, yourself to your tribe, yourself to the place from which you come, and then finally yourself to the whole cosmos. And then they said, it was towards becoming a complete person, a complete man or woman. So the goal, you see, of indigenous education, as was reflected in the poem, was to find your face, find your heart, find your foundation in these relationships and responsibilities, concentric relationships and responsibilities, towards the goal of becoming a complete human being. And so when I found that, I said, this is the essence of indigenous epistemology, you know, because as you will discover as you study this among different tribes, they have different ways of saying basically the same thing, you know, that one must know oneself, one must have a sense of your spirit or your desire, one has to have foundation that's rooted in a community of relationship and responsibility, and that there's a spiritual aspect that guides you as much as an intellectual, you know, towards this journey, if you will, to the top of the mountain. And so that, I think, really epitomizes for me what indigenous education is. And so knowing that and understanding that, we can then, in a sense, begin to build some, in a sense, in a contemporary education setting, some kinds of curriculum that begin to bring some of these values, these core values, these core orientations out again among students. And you can use different subject areas to do this, of course. And you know, and before I was at the Institute of American Indian Arts, I was a field biologist. So my area is science, but I'm also an artist. I'm also an indigenous person. So what I started to do was create curriculum that integrated these different aspects of myself, which I know was also true of my students, and bring them together in kind of a cohesive learning map, learning process, which we call curriculum. And so I, you know, that's basically that story, that part of the story.
I love that story, but because I think that so much of our world is in pain today, and primarily because of this fragmentation of who we are. You know, our bodies have become just a vehicle that carries our head, one of my professors said. And, you know, we live totally disconnected, not only to ourselves, but also to the people around us. And that, you know, this connection also leads to a distancing of the suffering of others. So our world is in need of healing. In your book, you speak of healing. We live in a world with deep scars where one needs only to look around to see the suffering of war, the result of war, hunger, chronic unemployment. Can we heal a world without first acknowledging the nature of this wound?
Well, definitely, you know, colonization wounds people very deeply and through generations. And so in many ways, what has been happening these past few years, you know, has been a kind of recognition that we are and have been traumatized by colonization, an understanding of that process. And I think that we're finally beginning to now move forward into a new phase of thinking about ourselves in a very different kind of way than we were conditioned to with regard to our own colonization. And so, you know, in earlier days with the boarding school, with the ways in which Native kids were indoctrinated within schools, to forget their culture, forget their language, to forget their history even. And for a period, and also for several generations of Native people, that was their experience of education. We've now, I think, turned a corner, especially with, in 1974, there was an act called the Indian Self-Determination Act, in which Native people were given the right, in a sense, to create their own schools, and also to create their own forms of education, you know. And so that's that then gave the impetus for many Native educators to begin to think about what and how we could actually create a different way of educating ourselves and our students in a way that honored their history, honored their language, honored their traditions, honored their communities. And so that's been a struggle. It's been a long journey. It's still a journey that continues in a variety of different kinds of ways. I call it, at this point in time, the indigenous mind rising. because what I see as I go around all over the world, basically, and work with indigenous populations around education as a whole or science education, I'm beginning to see that many indigenous peoples, many indigenous cultures are moving towards, in a sense, you know, honoring their past, really recreating or revitalizing their language and their communities, and then also bringing forward education as a tool, not only of decolonizing themselves, but actually making education indigenous once again. And so I think that that's the vision for the future, is the sense that as this process evolves through time among indigenous populations and people, that this is really the goal that indigenous people have for themselves. It's more than, you know, getting a job and fitting into the system, because that was also a phase of Native education. But I think now it's moving, you know, towards this deeper reclaiming and recreating of our indigenous identity, indigenous heritage, you know, through the process of education. And so I know that indigenous scholars, you know, wherever you find them in the world, are very, very much involved with this kind of enterprise these days. So that's my hope, is that, that's the healing of the wound. And it's not only the healing of the wound, but it now, in a sense, is moving into a phase of revitalization and recreation of indigenous culture in a contemporary setting in ways that are appropriate and ways that make sense, but also a renewal, I guess you might say, of indigenous spirituality, indigenous economics, indigenous community, indigenous forms of education, so that we have, in a sense, a way to once again survive and actually even to thrive. Now, of course, you know, the world is in such chaos these days, and so, you know, we have climate change, we have wars, we have poverty, we have, you know, the struggle of economics, if you will. But I still, within that context, the indigenous mind is rising, and I think that, especially in the areas of ecology and ecological philosophy, I think that many of the new ecological academics have paid heed and are beginning to build on indigenous-like concepts, you know, within education and also within the ecological movement. So I see a lot of hope, you know, at least in that context. But again, indigenous people have to do a lot of the work for themselves if they are also going to be a part of that broader global movement, I guess you might say.
Thank you so much for being with us. We're coming to the end of the interview, but I wonder if you could just leave us with some words of inspiration. What inspires you to continue to struggle against what you just described, all this chaos that surrounds us? What inspires your hope that we can, you know, create a different story? What should that new story of who we can become?
Well, I think, you know, education in its best sense always has to be about visions of a brighter future. And so my hope, you know, in the work that I do, I am a director of Native American Studies at the University of New Mexico, and I've been in that position for 10 years. And so what I'm doing with the students that I'm working with in our degree program is helping them think about, you know, that sense of who we are, our history, have them understand, you know, the issues in a very deep and using research in a way, helping them to understand their present situation. But finally, having them create a context in which they can use that kind of education for engaging a vision of the future. And that vision of the future, I think, really needs to be about a reclaiming of indigenous values globally with regard to how we interact with each other, which is one kind of ecology. It's social ecology in more harmonious and more self-supporting ways or mutually supporting ways. How we engage with our natural environment in a more supportive and ecologically sound way, and how we engage with ourselves spiritually, because I think there's also, you know, part of this issue of the modern dilemma, or the in terms of modernity, and also the issues of capitalism, as kind of the underpinning of that modernity, is that we have to begin to create new ways of understanding how we interact with each other, around how we develop our forms of economic, our forms of education, our forms of community. So right now I'm really exploring in my next book. I've written six books, but the seventh book is going to be about pedagogy of indigenous community, very much like Look to the Mountain in some ways, but to take a look at ways in which we begin to work with each other in more harmonious and more direct ways, applying indigenous principles from the past, applying the best ideas from the present, and really beginning to forge a different kind of future for our children and for our communities. So my hope is that education can actually become a tool not for indoctrination and for assimilation, as it was used in the past for indigenous people, but a tool for transformation and for truly becoming and finding your face and finding your heart and truly becoming complete human beings once again.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for being with us. How can people access your books?
I can be reached at G Cajete, and that's just G C A J E T E @AOL.com.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us and for taking the time to talk with us.
Okay, thank you, Sylvia. Have a great day.
That was Dr. Gregory Cajete. He is the director of the Native American Studies. He's also an author, and his book, Look to the Mountain, is a fantastic and highly recommended book for anyone looking to create transformative change in education or in our community. Thank you for listening to Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an independently produced syndicated radio program made available for free to campus and community radios, and also to the world at latinwavesmedia.com. Please visit the website to hear previous shows, hear about upcoming events, and consider becoming a member for as little as $1 per month.